Ephesians 4. So, what we discussed last week is the oneness of the body.
You're recording?
I'm recording. Thank you, good sir. The oneness of the body. I'll hit this a lot. We have got to get out of individualistic thinking. God didn't do this whole thing to bring everyone together just for you to live and think like you're on an island, okay? So this oneness. And we talk about the gifts that were given to men. And he identifies who that is. He gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and teachers. Shepherds there is used in noun form. Shepherds or shepherd teachers. They have a couple of roles. To equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God. But as Josh pointed out last week, and it's good, it doesn't mean that those in those roles are doing everything for you. It's helping you to mature so that you do the ministry. I'm a minister, but am I the only one here that ministers in the most basic sense of the word, and that's how he's using it? I am a preacher, that is true. But am I the only one that preaches? Do you see what I'm saying? And so there's a ministry that we all have in the body, and I'm just one part of that puzzle that'll help you come to your maturity so that you can do your work. So we're all working together. But what I said is I was going to go back because I want to read a portion here. After the seven ones, verse 7, but grace was given to each one of us according to the measure of Christ's gift. Okay? Therefore it says, and what he does is he quotes from Psalm 68. When he ascended on high, he led a host of captives and he gave gifts to men. Okay, did you hear that? And then part of that quote, it talks about he ascended. And so Paul comments on that. And saying he ascended, what does it mean? But that he also descended into, your translation may say, the lower regions of the earth. The ESV translates it, the lower regions, the earth. So in other words, it identifies as the lower regions as the earth. Okay, there's actually been a lot of discussion around this passage, whether you know it or not. And in this format, when we're doing book studies, this is the time where I get to slow down a little bit and nerd out with you. Okay, when you have a quotation of an Old Testament passage, what are you supposed to do? So let's go to it. Psalm 68. Psalm 68. It's not stellar. Sometimes it's true, but it's not stellar to isolate one verse out of an Old Testament passage. Not every time, but he has the whole chapter in mind. That's why, like, for me, my interpretation, my opinion of Jesus' words, my God, why have you forsaken me? I don't doubt that Jesus, he realized God was not going to save him from the cross, and he felt all the weight and all the pain. But like, for example, read the whole psalm and it's actually David saying, I know it looks this way and it feels this way, but it's not that way. I think that's actually the point. Well, in Psalm 68, for example, whenever you come to the passage quoted, it's verse 18. You ascended on high, leading a host of captives in your train and receiving gifts among men. Now, tell me what's wrong with that. So, Paul says he does what to men? He's giving gifts. But the psalm says he's... Well, is there a change in the Hebrew or the Septuagint? Nope, totally consistent. What about the Greek translation? No, totally consistent. It is what it is. So now we got to go back and we begin to read. Psalm 68. God shall arise, his enemies shall be scattered, and those who hate him shall flee before him. Okay, so God in this passage is going to be seen as a warlord. Sometimes God is even called, like the Deuteronomy song of praise, God's a man of valor. And so sometimes it depicts him as a warlord. As smoke is driven away, so you shall drive them away. As wax melts before the fire, so the wicked shall perish before God. But the righteous shall be glad. They shall exult before God. They shall be jubilant with joy. Sing to God. Sing praises to his name. Lift up a song to him who rides through the deserts. His name is the Lord. Exult before him. That's pretty cool. Father of the fatherless, protector of widows, is God in his holy habitation. God settles the solitary in a home. He leads out the prisoners to prosperity, but the rebellious dwell in a parched land. Now, I bring that out because in this one, and it's forming a little bit of how I'm going to interpret, see, Ephesians 4, because in this psalm, who is God leading out? The bad people or the people that he saved? What do you think? The people he saved. Okay, now, I just want you to keep that in mind. The people that he saved, he's leading out. Oh God, you went out before your people when you marched through the wilderness, the earthquake, the heavens poured down rain before God, the one of Sinai, before God, the God of Israel. Rain in abundance, oh God, you shed abroad, you restored your inheritance as it languished. Your flock found a dwelling in it. In your goodness, oh God, you provided for the needy. This, I think, is going back to narrative of God's deliverance of his people. The Lord gives the word. The women who announce the news are a great host. The kings of the armies, they flee. The women at home divide the spoil. Though you men lie among the sheepfolds, the wings of a dove covered with silver, its pinions with shimmering gold, when the Almighty scatters kings there. Let snow fall on Zalman. O mountain of God, mountain of Bashan. Oh, many peaked. Now, this is the section. So I'm drawing our attention because here in particular is the portion that Paul's going to quote from. O mountain of God, O mountain of Bashan, O many peaked mountain, mountain of Bashan. Why do you look with hatred, O many peaked mountain, at the mount that God desired for his abode? Yes, where the Lord will dwell forever. The chariots of God are twice 10,000, thousands upon thousands. The Lord is among them. Sinai is now in the sanctuary. You ascended on high, leading a host of captives in your train and receiving gifts among men, even among the rebellious, that the Lord God may dwell there. Now, by the end, we go through the whole psalm. Listen, by the end of it, verse 35, awesome is God from his sanctuary, the God of Israel. He is the one who gives power and strength to his people. Blessed be God. It ends with him giving gifts to his people. And so I think what Paul's doing here is he's summing up the totality of the psalm, though that particular verse has him receiving gifts. The totality of the song ends up being this conqueror who gives gifts. And he, by the inspiration, does that. But you've got this interesting here, and I'm just trying to be very transparent. You know, what do you do with this? Well, on one hand, he's leading captives out, but they were his own people. But then whenever you get a little bit further and it talks about Bashan, brethren, in the Old Testament, whenever it's naming a place, it's more than geography. A place stands for something. And Bashan would eventually be conquered by Israel, but its history was a place that had two kings, in particular King Og, you'll remember that one, who was a giant of a man. Do you remember that? Descended from the giants is who they believe. Okay? Bashan is synonymous with Mount Hermon. And in the ancient days, that was the place that they believed was the entrance, the gates to the underworld. And it was the place, the mountains of the gods. Did you know? So in the Near East religions, long ago, every god has their what? Mountain. For the Hebrews, who was their god? Jehovah. And where was the mountain? Sinai. As time goes on, what's the new mountain of God? Zion, correct? The Greeks had them, the Romans had them, the Babylonians had them. Everyone had their gods. They had their mountains. So, kind of cool, but fast forwarding to Jesus' time, whenever Jesus is at Caesarea Philippi, and he says, who do people say the Son of Man are? And they're like, well, some say what? Like Elijah, one of the prophets, right? Blah, blah. He says, who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter says, what? You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And he says, oh, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you that upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail. Do you know where Jesus is standing? Bashan's behind him. Where Jesus is standing is at the area of Mount Hermon. He is standing where, in their time, they believe the gates of hell were. And what he's saying is that they will not prevail. The evil powers will not prevail over me. Have you ever noticed, by the way, in Psalm 22... It's taking me forever to turn over there. Psalm 22. My God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I find no rest. You know the psalm. Look, skipping down to verse 12. Many bulls encompass me. Strong bulls of Bashan surround me. They open wide their mouths at me like a ravening and roaring lion. Brethren, what do you think he's talking about? On the cross, he's saying the bulls of Bashan surround him. What is he referring to? What's the fulfillment? Who does Jesus put to shame on the cross? The dark principalities. There is so much going on in this text. It's interesting. So, I'll kind of wrap this up and then get any thoughts or questions that you have. Let's go back to the Ephesians passage. Verse 8. Therefore it says, when he ascended on high, he led a host of captives and he gave gifts to men. Some people, and I'm going to take the chicken away out, I don't know where I'm at. Sorry. I mean, you know, I'm good about telling you, like, this is where I'm at, and then I'm good about telling you, I don't know. Some people think that he led a host of captives, that they're the evil powers, because in the most immediate text there, it's Bashan, and they think that he's leading them captive, right? And there's an interpretation. But others see that the totality of the psalm, he has more, that he's taken his people that were laid that were held captive by the power of who? The dark principalities, and he has liberated them. Okay? And I think that's a good interpretation. And he's giving gifts to men. Now, one of the other reasons why it's like, does it matter? Well, because the ones who believe that he's taking captive the dark powers, they also see something in the next passage. So, in verse 9, in saying he ascended, what does it mean but that he also descended into the lower regions of the earth? That's the ESV, or into the lower regions of the earth, okay? There are some people that believe that, boy, this is getting such a rabbit hole, so I'm going to have to make sure not to get too distracted. There's some people who believe that this is talking about Hades. Hades. And matter of fact, you may or may not know this, but like guys like Alexander Campbell. So Alexander Campbell was one of those guys. He believed that the sons of God in Genesis 6, angelic beings, had sex with the sons of men. I'm saying this is his belief system. And from that were these giant offspring. And in the flood, there was a particular people. I'm just saying I'm trying to explain. I don't want you guys freaking out on me. I'm just trying to explain something for a moment. And they believe that those disembodied, those in particular, which some call demons, they think that the demons have a special class. That those from old are a certain class. And then it doesn't help whenever the book of Enoch, which is not inspired, but it's interesting. The book of Enoch, whenever you have all these, and you have these angels that say, hey, there's these women, let's go down and be with these women. And they have children. Before they do that, they go to Mount Hermon. Bashan. Later on, whenever they're sent into the underground of the Sheol, these angels, the watchers, are asking Enoch, hey, would you basically plead for us? And Enoch has to go down to Sheol and say, your request has been denied. You're staying here. You're like, dude, why are you saying all this? Well, because when you go to 1 Peter 3, I'm just going to pick up in verse 18. For Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit, in which he went and proclaimed to the spirits in prison, because they formerly did not obey when God's patience waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is, eight persons, were brought safely through water. You know this passage. And what's typically, what are people saying? You have two interpretations. They're either saying that Jesus preached in the days of Noah, that is, through Noah, to the souls that were imprisoned. That means all the people that didn't listen to Noah. Okay? And I will tell you, and I may be wrong, this is where I side, and you may be saying, you amateur, and that's okay. But right now, I tend to lean towards that. But others think that, no, Jesus literally went to those in prison, and they think that it has some connection. Like, when he died, he went to the realm of the dead to reiterate to those who had died long ago, I am victorious over you. Now, I'm just telling you this because I want you to be aware, and I don't want you to think that I'm trying to run from something. What I don't know where I'm at today, and then we'll move on after this, after your thoughts, your comments. Here's where I'm at today. The captives that he leads out, I don't know if he's talking about the evil forces or the people that he's liberated. I kind of lean towards that one, okay? But whenever it talks about him descending, I think it's just talking about him who came to earth. I don't think it's meant to be this whole theology of all the stuff that happened and people he preached to. I could be wrong. And you want to know, here's my why I'm there. Whenever Jesus is on the cross and the criminal has a change of mind and he said, Lord, what? Remember, what does he say? Y'all know. Remember when you come to your kingdom and Jesus says, truly I tell you, today you'll be with me in paradise. And that may be too simplistic, but today that's where I'm at. And I just think that's good enough for me. I think Jesus went to the Father. I know Paul speaks of a man, 2 Corinthians 12, it's himself, he identifies himself, a man who was caught up to the third heaven, into paradise. And so that's where I'm at. Okay, so recap, Sean, what are you saying? I'm saying he's pulling from Psalm 68. It seems misquoted, but he's taking the totality of the psalm. The bottom line, let's get this. God is victorious, and he gifts his people. And what did he gift his people? These roles. And what do these roles do? Help the people mature so that they may do their ministry. Now, I don't want to lose the big picture. That's the big picture. Okay, I'm done. Thoughts? Questions? Ridicule. Go ahead. Let's have it. Yes, sir.
The language he uses, when he ascended, and then he said, on high, he led a host of captives.
Yes.
If it were the one you are not waiting for, that ascended doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
Like,
you're not going to ascend if you're condemning someone who's got to be delivered to Sheol, right?
In other words, you're like, you're going the wrong direction.
Yeah, something like that. And that would seem to make sense with the characteristic, the way they use the language. Yeah. Ascending seems to be more spiritual. Descending seems to be anti-spiritual.
That's a good thought. I'm only doing devil's advocate. I'm trying to think about from what I read, there's a possibility to where I could see them saying yes, because there's no doubt that they thought directional.
I mean, I literally have I could pull up a chart right now and show you the ancient world on how they viewed the heavens and the earth. And in the belly of the earth, they'll have like a Sheol. Like, they think it's like under the ground. But at the same time, some talk about they didn't always think about it literally as geography, but around. And so maybe some of them could say, well, it's more of a realm, you're getting too literal. But generally speaking, bad is down. Well, and I say that actually, I need to correct that. Sheol doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It's just the realm of the dead.
Right.
Sorry.
You'll never see someone saying they want to ascend to the realm of Sheol.
I've never heard someone say I want to ascend to hell.
And it's or the same, like, yeah. That's the same way in the contemporaries, in the Greek,
yeah,
and in the Roman. That's the same thing. So the language for this period, if you actually are using ascending, doesn't really jive with the one you're not leaning for. Because if you look at it, like you said, holistically overall,
yeah,
99 times out of 100, ascend is never used on going to that place.
I'm literally just trying to cross it. I think the only thing it may be, and again, I'm not disagreeing with you, I'm just trying to be super objective on this. I'm thinking about Jesus' is it a parable or not, the rich man and Lazarus, and they're carried away. So that realm, that one makes you think more. But that one would also correspond to the Sheol. I'm literally just trying to think out loud. But no, I can't think of any.
I'm just walking it with you. I'm just thinking out loud.
Yes, sir. Then I'll get ready.
Well, there's Lazarus and the rich man. You agree that there's a barrier. There's something that divides the two realms, and it's also important to remember part of the punishment isn't, you know, brimstone, fire, and all the rest. It's separation from God. And so it doesn't make sense that Jesus, who is God, would go into a place where part of the punishment is you're separated from him. And to me, that's always been a huge disconnect. I think it's part of the problem that people don't actually understand how.
I think, okay, so, y'all are going to hate me. I got to do the devil's advocate, just so that I'm representing this side correctly. They view it as the Hadean realm. And so he would go, I'm just saying to be fair, they would say, no, we don't think he went to a torturous place. They think that that he went to a realm to declare his victory. So if you think about even that rich man and Lazarus, they could talk to each other. They could both communicate with each other. Although I'll tell you, I still think it's a parable, and I don't know how literal to take all of that. But
fair enough.
Yeah. I'm not trying to be annoying.
A lot of these things, this is a consequence of common luxury sins at this point. We have access to a lot of knowledge, a lot of cross-references, such as the book of Enoch, but a lot of people in ancient times had no idea it existed.
Well, the Enoch they did. First Enoch was super popular. Yeah, First Enoch was super, super popular in the first century. To be fair on that one. I'm really trying to do... that one in particular was well known. And that's why Peter quotes from it. Rick.
Not saying this is where I'm at. Like you, I'm looking at a lot of things. But one of the thoughts that's out there is that Jesus spoke in parables and in ways that were difficult to understand. And there is a theory that there is a spiritual realm that when you think about his heel is bruised, but he crushed the head, that his ascension on the cross may have led away spiritual, just misdirected the spiritual realm that allowed him to give gifts to man. Because remember, we're dealing with a time that prior to Jesus on the cross, we have demon possession, we have things going on that we can't that he was very careful about how he was trading the prophecy of him being sacrificed because he did not want the demons on earth to not fulfill God's plan. Take the cost, like I said, I'm still struggling with this as well, but when you start reading, it does make you start reading 1 Peter in a different way. It does make you start reading Ephesians in a different way when you start seeing these beings in spirit and in these spiritual realms that things start jumping out at you that you never saw before.
And I just want to be clear, because I do like this area, and I think it deserves more attention. But also, with all things, you always have to keep perspective. There are so many fascinating things that we learn over time that help paint the backdrop of our brethren 2,000 years ago or further back. Things that you may or may not know. But even I will tell you, there's certain things you don't have to know. You don't have to know them. It makes the text come to life, and I think it helps. What I would still say today, but this is interesting, and this is like, ooh, this is... But do we understand the main point? See, that's what I would always say, but what's the point? And Rick, to your point, he didn't, like, symbolically defeat the principalities. No, we need to understand that on the cross, the bulls of Bashan were surrounding him. The evil powers were against him. They were not in the know. They believed that they were defeating Jesus. Paul straight up writes that if they'd known it, they wouldn't have done it. God was keeping his plan close to chest. He was not sharing this with the angels, with the beings who knew this. God is the only one that knew it because they're free will and because there's betrayers. So when Jesus died on the cross, he was freeing his people from their sin and from their slave owner in a very real way. And there was a blow to the dark powers. And that is real.
And also, putting perspective in your patient, put a visual to this. This is an area where humans were sacrificed.
Yeah.
Babies were sacrificed. Yeah. This is a very, like I said, we have a hard time wrapping our head around how evil this place on earth was.
Absolutely. Josh, thank you, sir. Yeah, okay, so what are your thoughts on First Peter 3?
Well,
right. Did y'all hear that? He was saying that it has that word proclaim. It could mean proclaim like we think of the truth, or just, but it can also mean just proclaiming something, like proclaiming a victory.
But in Ephesians, I also think going back to what we talked about in the Greek, looking at context is very powerful, right? So it's interesting the twist that he makes that's different. And he gave so when you look at
what is your thought about that? Do you think those are like the evil forces or his people that were taken captive? What do you
think? I think he's referring back to Ephesians 2:1. Like, look at who you were.
Mm-hmm.
You were the enemy. You were the people who were fighting against God. And the Jewish connotation is there too. The Jews mm-hmm. were the ones fighting against God. They're the ones who actually sacrificed him. Mm-hmm. And so you see this idea that he's got these captives, these enemies, that he comes and he conquers. But there's a twist. When the Romans capture the Jews, they don't bring gifts. When the Jews conquer the Philistines, they don't bring gifts. But Jesus, when he captures you, if you submit to him, you're still in slavery, Romans 6 talks about. But when he does, he brings a gift to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is his church.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, that's where I see this captivity coming, is, look, you guys were all enemies of God in chapter
Yeah.
So Josh, and correct me if I misrepresent you. Josh is saying he believes that the captives there are the human family that have sinned against him and his enemies, which, by the way, would correlate with Romans chapter 5 as well. What were you at the time of Christ? And he leads them captives, but he ends up gifting them versus the spiritual family. And I agree with you on that one. I tend to lean towards, because they're captives, because here's the deal. If we're talking about even as people, but they were captives to who? Satan. And how are they captives to Satan? Because they sinned against God. So they made themselves enemies. And I tend to lean towards that as well. But then with 1 Peter 3, brother, you're thinking, though, that may be Jesus in that realm proclaiming his victory. So very good, guys. Any other thoughts? If not, we'll move on. Okay. Verse 17. Okay, so remember we got the little illustration. Little kid, big head, little body. And the body is trying to grow up in proportion to the head. Jesus is the head. We're maturing. With that. Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do. Which is funny because there's some of them Gentiles. Yeah, so pick up how he's talking to them. Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do, in the futility of their minds. Will y'all throw me another word for futility? Give me another word. Futility. How would you phrase that?
Useless.
That's great.
Frustrated.
Okay. Very good.
Worthless.
Just hang on to that. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to their hardness of heart. They have become callous and have given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. I want to stop right there. In a sense, sometimes Jesus calls us to be philosophers. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? What I'm saying, what are you taking from this? How do you apply it? Sometimes Jesus is calling us, and I'm being a little cute here, but he's calling us to be psychologists. I want you to think about people. Tell me something about the world based on those passages. Tell me who the world is. Tell me about their minds. Tell me about what they do. Tell me about why they are where they are. Because Paul's, by the Spirit, is revealing to you the realities of people. So, who are they? Talk to me about it.
Missing out.
Okay, they're missing out. Why are they missing out? Hardness of heart. How does that hardness of heart come about? Why does it come about?
Because sensitivity of what's going on in the world. You know, we want ready and unworthy, and then you think about what you're doing, what you've done and done. Mm-hmm. There's so much difference, and yet we let a little bit of it creep in.
Yes.
All the time, until it doesn't seem like much, so we go on more and more and more. But the word is
yes, ma'am.
And
we call that a seared conscience over time.
Yeah.
And Miss Peggy, did that happen by accident, or did you choose to do that?
Oh no, you
didn't. Well, did you not know that it was wrong?
Yes.
So you ignored it. So you're ignorant.
Yes.
Willful ignorance.
Yes.
There you go. So here's the world. And I'm talking generally speaking. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes, ma'am.
But I still realize it's wrong and stuff. When you're going alien to the worldness, you may realize it's wrong. You may think that your heart is so hard that you don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah, and this is why I just wanted to be clear. I'm speaking in general terms. Okay, and that, which I think is what Paul is generally approaching this.
Brethren, there's going to be nuances and things that God's going to have to deal with that I'm so happy he's going to deal with it, because I believe he's going to be good and just. I'm not worried about judgment day, because God's going to bat 1,000 on judgment day on what he gets right. He's going to get it right. Okay? But generally speaking, people know. Romans chapter 1, Paul says, all these things you do, and even though you knew God's decree that this is going to result in punishment, not only do you do it, you encourage others to do it. Don't tell me you didn't know. Now, there could be specifics, but now at least, would you agree with me on this one? Modern application. Do you think, if you're someone that's going to claim ignorance to God and who he is in the Word, do you think that should come from someone living in the USA? What I didn't just say is that we're the cream of the crop, but what I'm saying is that you have most people in the USA heard of Jesus? Yeah, we're not the kind of people who'd be like, oh, I didn't hear about it. You didn't want to hear about it. I remember one of my close friends in high school growing up, and he ends up in an adulterous marriage, and he's talking to me about it one time. Can you imagine? Not a fun conversation. I mean, it broke my heart. I didn't know. I'm like, dude, you grew up Catholic, man. You went to Catholic your whole life. I mean, we don't agree. You know we don't agree, but I'm telling you, you never heard anything on that one. I didn't know, and she didn't know. I'm like, well, that's, I mean, I'm speaking really bluntly, but what did I have to tell him? That's on you. And the reality is, he didn't want to know these guys. He wasn't serious about his faith. Yes, sir.
You're describing a difference between knowing and caring. Okay. And when you said willful ignorance, it's actually also blissful ignorance.
Yes.
Because if you have knowledge and you apply it,
yes,
your life is much more difficult. The yes. choice isn't much easier at the make. That's why we call it a lot of the time blissful ignorance.
Yes.
You make the choices because they're the easiest one to make.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't, listen, again, what's in the word ignorance?
Knowledge.
Ignore.
Correct.
And so you're ignoring the things, and I think this is the same principle of like John chapter 3, we all know 16, but what he goes on to say is that I didn't come into the world to condemn the world, I came into the world to save the world. But here's the judgment, the light came into the world, and people love the what rather than the what? The darkness. And why didn't they like the light? Because their what are exposed. They don't want it. They don't want it. And it's blissful. You're right on it. And all I'm trying to say here is that a general principle is that people don't want to know. They don't want to deal with this. But they got to live with themselves. So then you got to harden this. Now they think they're in the know. They think they're wise. They think that they know where they're going. I'll go tell you all about it. But Paul says everything in here is futile. It's useless. It's meaningless. It's worthless. And it's hard because as Christians, we can get in this little nice setting where we're all in one bubble and we're all in agreement. And we go, yeah. But then we get out of there. And let me tell you, that world's pretty impressive. Because in here, I'm saying they don't know what they're doing. You get up there and like, can you imagine? You know who the CEO of Amazon is. Imagine when you've been like, you don't really know what you're doing. He's like, ha! I know what I'm doing, buddy. But we'd say, no, but spiritually, you don't know what you're doing. Yeah? Easy to talk about. Interesting once you get that out there in it. Yes, sir. Sorry.
Well, we've been kind of implying it, but hardness of heart also means that you're not willing to change.
Yes.
And Hebrews, listen, this is used of God's people. Listen, Hebrews chapter 3. Oh, I'm sorry, Hebrews chapter 3.
What did Dusty say? Dusty was saying that you have a hardness of heart, is what we're talking about. He's like, we're kind of dancing around it, but we haven't said it in particular.
Unwilling to change. Sorry, I'm going Hebrews 3. No, I'm all over the place, aren't I? Hebrews chapter 3, listen to this. Now, this is speaking about the generation that would wander in the wilderness for 40 years, not enter the rest. verse 12. Take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God. But exhort one another every day as long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have come to share in Christ, if indeed we hold our original confidence firm to the end.
Do you agree with Dusty? That generation was unwilling to change, right? They were unwilling to change their heart. We could even charge them with unbelief.
Last comment I'll make, and then if you've got one, we'll wrap it up. We got one more minute left.
As far as this principle, here's just a warning. We tell people all the time, you could die tomorrow.
And that's true, you could. But how many of you believe you're going to die tomorrow?
None of you. You tell a kid that's 16, 17, you could die tomorrow. It's like, okay.
And here's the deal. Most of them don't. And they may outlive you. But here's where Satan gets. Satan knows that they know. They're not afraid of that.
Satan's all right. As soon as you say that, you've entered into my realm. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to chip away at you and chip away and chip away and chip away.
Because you keep telling yourself, because if you've been like me, I hope you weren't, but a guy who fell away. You know what I said? I'll get back to it.
But most of us don't get back to it. Because as we spend more and more time in Satan's playground, we don't want to leave. And we even didn't realize that we're with him too long. And the desire changed. And that's scary business. Amen? That's scary, scary business. Thank God that he gave me time and woke me up and down. That I was able to wake up.
All right, you can have the final thought. You've got 20 seconds. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
And Hebrews text deals with this also. Like, the more that you're drawn into that, the more you're building up a lack of sensitivity. You're getting calloused. And it's a reason why we have a call to everybody around us to be watching and protecting and saying, brother, come here.
Yes.
You are not picking up on these messages from the Holy Spirit to not do this. Let me come in and be another voice.
Very good. Guys, he's just making the point. Remember that a callous is something that happens. You got to do it over and over and over again. And this one is a callous over the heart. Whenever you see a brother or sister that's just doing and doing, and you see them building up that callous, we have got to work as one to say, hey, you're rejecting the Spirit's message. You're rejecting God. And this is the road you're headed down. Very good. Yeah, Phil, we'll give you the last word. Yes, sir.
One thing that's helpful to me is considering any issue or decision about matters in spiritual ways. First of all, considering very thoroughly and openly as I can what I want to believe. Because what I want to believe is going to play a major part in the conclusion that I'm going to reach, and what we're seeing in the form of others and how the thing can become callous, all applies to us. And I found that I can interrupt it sooner by saying, okay, I'm going to be affected by what I really want to do. What do I want to believe that? Let's evaluate that.
That's a beautiful way to end it. Hey, here's the question for us as we end. Ask yourself this question. Are you a person seeking what you want to believe? You're asking, what do I want to believe? And then you make it happen? Or are you a person that seeks truth, whatever that is, and you believe in it? Is that fair? Amen. Okay. Thank you, guys. Enjoy it.